I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to take a look at the issue of student journalists' rights and responsibilities. There's a bill working its way through the Indiana General Assembly now, dealing with those rights and responsibilities. We'll examine what the bill does and what it doesn't do in our hour together today. My guests are Diana Hadley, Executive Director of the Indiana High School Press Association, Mike Kloppenstein, who is newspaper advisor at Southport High School, and Southport High School student journalist Andrew Tapp. We also may have a couple of surprise guests along the way. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits at WFYI.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about student journalist rights and responsibilities today. The hook for the show is Indiana House Bill 1130, which provides protections to student journalists in public schools and state-funded universities. If you'd like to join the conversation, please call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Indiana Representative Ed Clear, a Republican from New Albany, who is the bill's author, one of the authors. Diana Hadley, who is the Executive Director of the Indiana High School Press Association. Mike Kloppenstein, who is the advisor at Southport High School, and Southport High School student journalist Drew Tapp. We also hope to be joined shortly by Todd Bess, who is the executive director of the Indiana Association of High School Principals. Well, welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great to be with you, John.
It's good to have you here, and I need to do a disclosure at the top of this discussion. May have to do it a couple of times here. The Indiana High School Press Association is housed at Franklin College, where I work, and in fact, I have fiscal oversight responsibilities for the High School Press Association. For the purpose of this discussion, though, obviously, I am just going to try to pose questions and draw the important issues out as I can. Representative Clear, I'm going to start with you. Could you tell me a little bit about what this bill does, what its goal is?
Thanks, John. Good to be with you. We are trying to make sure that student journalists in public school settings and at public colleges and universities have freedom of expression and freedom of the press. There may be others who want to speak to this, but there was a Supreme Court decision, U.S. Supreme Court decision in 1988, the Hazelwood decision, that gave schools the right to censor student expression and student media. And there's been a movement across the country in more than a dozen other states. There's legislation moving in several other states right now to provide protection at the state level. In the absence of that protection, the Supreme Court ruling gives schools the right to censor.
Diana, why now with this bill, and what problem is it trying to solve?
I think one of the things we hope that it will solve is the equality issue. Some administrators in schools choose to give students voice regardless of the Hazelwood decision. But after almost 30 years since that decision was passed down, some administrators use it as a way to keep students from saying anything that, and this is a quote, makes the school look bad. This is a quote that we hear pretty frequently. Now, making the school look bad can be any kind of issue that really isn't the school's fault. But because students are discouraged from discussing it, it's hard to find those good student solutions, which they often have.
Now, the bill has moved through the House. It's chamber of origin, to use legislative speak here. It passed out of committee in the House unanimously, 13-0, and moved out of the House on an 88-4 vote, right?
That's right.
But there is some opposition to the bill that we probably ought to point out, and I'm again, we're hoping that that Todd Best will join us shortly. But we do have some sound from some of the testimony in opposition to the bill. This comes from Brian Smith, who is with the Indiana School Boards Association, and we'll listen to that real quickly.
The bill does allow a principal to suppress content if the principal can prove that the content is, for instance, libelous or slanderous. But how does a principal prove that the content is libelous or slanderous? And what happens if the student disagrees? Who is the arbiter? The reasons available to the school corporation for suppressing content are very narrow and, for instance, would not allow a principal to suppress speech that is lewd, vulgar, profane, offensive, or contrary to the mores of a community. So I understand the intent of the bill, but we are uncomfortable with the significant forfeiture of administrative oversight that the bill addresses.
That was Brian Smith of testifying. He is with the Indiana School Boards Association. We're joined now by Todd Bess, who is with the Indiana Association of High School Principals, is the executive director of that organization. Todd, thank you for joining us and for taking part in this conversation.
You're welcome.
We've talked a little bit about what the bill is, and we've heard from Diana Hadley about, you know, what, at least from the Indiana High School Press Association's perspective, is the need for the bill. We understand you have reservations and concerns about it. Could you speak to those and say what it is that concerns you about House Bill 1130?
Sure. Yeah, and just a point of clarification, the Indiana Association of School Principals, we represent K to 12.
Oh, okay.
Principals. So when we try to look at an issue, how's it going to impact on a system-wide reflection as well? So I think I happen to pick up a little bit of Dr. Smith there talking about some concerns.
Mm-hmm.
We hope that our principals are always being proactive to work with, I guess, the entire school operations. Because when you get into a reactive mode, sometimes then it's it just causes other difficulties. That's where we think we're in good a good setting right now with our current landscape of working with our journalism advisors and students, because it can be proactive in looking ahead to what might be impactful to the community or into the school and to individual kids. So, you know, under the provisions of this bill, you can't edit or take out content, and there are those multiple reasons. To me, many of those situations, though, are when it's going to be a reactive mode.
What do you mean by a reactive mode?
So, I'm pulling up the bill here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when it talks about material and substantially disrupt the operation of the public school. So, I think. And the way I read that is if I think something right now, if I think something's going to really be disruptive, I've got the ability as a high school principal or middle school principal to suggest that content shouldn't be there. But if we don't allow the principal to do that, we have to wait for that disruption to occur.
Is the issue, and I'll throw this to either Representative Clear or to Diana Hadley. Here, notice Todd used the word suggest, but it's really more than suggest. It's really ultimately, it strikes me just from listening to this and listening to Brian Smith's testimony, the issue is really who gets to say what goes into the paper. That's really what we're talking about here. Is that the case? Representative Clear, I'll give you the first word, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts on that.
Sure. I think it's about who decides what goes in the paper or what is broadcast, and our values suggest that we should always err on the side of free speech, and I think this legislation is consistent with that. I understand the administrator's desire to maintain the absolute control that they have enjoyed since Hazelwood, but that's not good for students. It's not good for journalism education. It's not good for free speech.
Diana, do you have anything you want to add?
Well, first I would like to say that I have great respect for principals. I think they have a very difficult job, and I would not want to be one. That said, principals who do decide that student voice is important have also supported this bill. And one of them is John Williams, the principal at Carmel High School. He came to testify. He didn't get to because when you're in charge of a school of almost 5,000 students and 2.5 hours passes, you have to get back. But here's what part of his testimony said. He said, "We all benefit from a student press. Student journalists benefit because a free press empowers them to provide meaningful content that matters. Student readers benefit because the news is catered specifically to them, and it can provide a responsible and powerful outlet for their voices. That doesn't mean I'm always comfortable with what is published, but over the years, I've learned to be comfortable being uncomfortable. It's easy and safe to say no, but when that occurs, there's always the chance for students and staff to miss out on amazing opportunities."
If you're just joining us, we're talking about Indiana House Bill 1130, which deals with the rights of student journalists in public schools and state-funded universities. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So, Mike and Drew, since the two of you live with this, give me an example of how this bill, if it does become law, would change your lives, change the way that you get to work. Drew, you want to go first, or either one of you?
I'll take it, John. The answer for me is not much.
Okay.
Not much at all. And I think for a lot of advisors around the state, a lot of journalism programs around the state, it wouldn't change it much. The bill is really for the schools where it would have an impact. I've been fortunate enough to work for principals who were very hands-off, were very trusting of me and my student journalists. The sad truth, however, is there are a lot of schools where the principals aren't like that. And in those schools, there either are no journalism programs or there are very bad journalism programs. As an advisor, I can tell you if this would be a bill that would have impacted me, I probably would have left that school long ago. As an advisor who takes himself seriously, I don't want to work for a principal who oversees my work, who doesn't trust me and doesn't trust my journalists. And I've been fortunate enough to not work for those principals. But there are a lot of advisors in a lot of schools that aren't so lucky.
Drew, how about you? As a student journalist who has to work, and what year are you at Southport?
I'm a junior, so this is my second year on staff.
Okay. How do you think it would – what impact do you think it would have on you?
Like Mr. K said, for me personally, not much, because our principal doesn't censor us and doesn't overwatch us because he trusts Mr. K to watch over us and guide us and advise us as his job is. But I know there are student journalists throughout the entire state of Indiana who have to face censorship and face oversight, and that at times it can make their jobs increase the stress level and also make them feel as though there are things that they can't report on. And if these are going to be the future journalists of our great democracy, then we want to make sure that they feel that they know they can go cover stuff, because at the professional level, journalists aren't censored by the government or independent agencies, and so we want to make sure that we're raising journalists that are going to be great journalists once they become professional in their adult lives.
Okay, we have gotten the discussion started. If you're just joining us, we are talking about student journalist rights and responsibilities. There's an Indiana House bill that is working its way through the Indiana General Assembly that is the springboard for our conversation. My guests are one of the bill's authors, Indiana Representative Ed Clear, a Republican from New Albany, Diana Hadley, Executive Director of the Indiana High School Press Association, Mike Kloffenstein, who is an advisor at Southport High School, Southport High School student journalist Drew Tapp, and Todd Bess, Executive Director of the Indiana Association of School Principals. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about Indiana House Bill 1130, which provides some protections to student journalists in public schools and state-funded universities. My guests are Indiana Representative Ed Clear. He is a Republican from New Albany and one of the bill's authors. Diana Hadley, who is the Executive Director of the Indiana High School Press Association, which is located at Franklin College. And in the interest of full disclosure, I have to say I have a financial oversight responsibility for IHSPA. Mike Kloffenstein, who is a newspaper advisor at Southport High School, and Southport High School student journalist Drew Tapp, and Todd Best, who is Executive Director of the Indiana Association of School Principals. Todd, I'm going to start with you because there are a couple of things, points made at the end of our last segment where, you know, they're saying really at some level in good high schools, this wouldn't have that much impact. What are the situations that you think principals would be most concerned about?
Well, I guess I look at this, regardless of the relationship, I guess, with the advisor and the students, I think principals are pretty aware of the issues that are within the school, I guess, context proper, and within a community as well. And so particular articles or publications, however that looks within the school programs, I think they're going to be very sensitive to how that impact is going to be. We've certainly got a large volume of national issues right now, or even community Indiana issues right now. I think the principals are wanting to make sure they're always balancing. You know, I heard the recent responses to the previous question about giving good voice to the students, and absolutely, that should be the intent of those programs. So balancing that need with the needs of the overall school atmosphere and the educational intent for all those students, whether that's the Carmel-sized high school of 5,000 or the small schools of 250 that we still have around the state as well.
We are talking about student press rights here on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Brendan has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Brendan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
My question is, has there been any instances that predicated such a bill to come to term in the first place, meaning has there anything that has occurred at either IUPUI or or Ivy Tech or any place that got this bill started as far as limitations that the school would like to put on the school journalism projects. I can't think of anything that has come up in recent past that would indicate a need for such a bill to come to the House floor.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I'll throw that one to Diana Hadley.
Sometimes the intimidation is kind of low key and yet forceful. At the high school level, which is the area that I deal with the most, I often hear about examples when I'm teaching workshops at universities in the summer, and as students from different schools describe their situations. All of a sudden, a student will say something, and I'm telling the truth here. I had a student say, "What if your school won't let you cover sports?" And I said, "You can't cover sports." He said, "No, we can't cover a sports team unless they win, and we don't have many teams winning." And, you know, that is when a situation has become a public relations tool instead of a student newspaper. Given the opportunity to cover issues, sometimes students will ask to cover an issue that may be the uncomfortable that Mr. Williams described. At my school, I was an advisor for 33 years. One time, an editor came in with an article about alcohol poisoning. And this was before there was a lot of discussion about alcohol poisoning, but she had already written an editorial describing the death of a student in another school from alcohol poisoning, and she was able to explain in that editorial what could cause that and that there was behavior among students in our own school that could lead to that. She won an award for that editorial. It was talking about a subject that maybe people in the community wished wasn't the case. But a few months later, I had a student come in and tell me about an alcohol poisoning that had taken place with one of our students. And he said, "I remembered that editorial in the Pulse." And I said, "We have to get her to the hospital." And we know that that editorial saved her life.
We're talking about the rights and responsibilities of student journalists here on No Limits. Allison, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
As I was listening to your high school student speak, I had to laugh a little bit, you know, because he said that in the real world, the government doesn't censor, and I think that's kind of adorably naive. and given...
He's chuckling. It's okay.
in the real world, in high schools, students don't even have a right to privacy regarding the contents of their backpacks, that we're having this conversation about whether, you know, they have a right to, you know, to free speech. I feel like the discussion is, how would we say, it's hopelessly too little too late. Maybe not. It's just that censorship is a very real thing that's happening, whether it's happening at an administrative level or an advisory level. Students today don't have a reasonable expectation of real rights because we don't treat them like real people. And I suppose that's it.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, Allison. So, Representative Clear and Todd Bass, I'm going to throw this one to both of you because part of this is something we hear fairly frequently is that students don't have the same rights that other citizens do. There is a legal argument for that being the case. Representative Clear, why is it, for example, that high school students don't have the same First Amendment rights or, you know, the same Fourth Amendment rights when it comes to being able to shelter what's in their lockers or in their backpacks and be protected from search?
You say why don't they have rights with respect to search?
Well, why? Basically, what is the argument for curtailing what otherwise would be their constitutional rights when they're in the public school?
Well, I don't know that the search issue falls under the First Amendment. I'm not
an attorney. It's a Fourth Amendment issue.
Right. But I think, if I may approach it a little bit differently, this bill provides a great deal of assurance for administrators, for school administrators, in that it specifically allows certain types of content to be held back, anything that would be libelous or slanderous, anything that would incite students to violate school policy or break the law. There are a number of categories in there. We added in committee language about anything that is deemed gratuitously profane, just to make it clear that this is not carte blanche for student journalists. With rights come responsibilities, clearly, and this is no different. Another point I think that's important here is that the schools have a lot of control in this situation, in that they decide who the journalism advisor is going to be, and that advisor is typically the person who has the final say in leadership positions in the student press. And Diana or somebody else can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, you know, there are at least two levels of control there that this bill does not affect. You know, a student doesn't just walk into the student newspaper and say, hey, I want to be the editor. There's a selection process for both the advisor and the editor and other leadership positions.
Mike, what is that process?
I could speak to what that process is at our school. Mm-hmm. In fact, just this week, I've had students submit applications for top leadership positions on our school publication. We've had six kids apply to be editor-in-chief and or managing editors for next year. I will vet them. I will go through their applications. I will interview them. And ultimately, based on those interviews, I will choose the editor-in-chief. I'll then work with the editor-in-chief to decide on the other top leadership positions, and then we choose subsequent leadership positions from there. But there absolutely is a layer of control on my part. I do have control over the top editors, but as soon as that editor-in-chief is selected, I immediately try to get student voice in the process to help the further decisions.
We're talking about student journalist rights and responsibilities here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Michael has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hello. I am a former student journalist at Perry Township High School, currently a college student. I guess the question and concern that I have is whether, if this bill passes, our student journalism programs protected from principals in retaliation shutting down those programs. It seems like that sort of protection isn't in place even if this bill passes, because there seems to be a lot of power that principals have. I'll take my answer off the air if that's okay with you.
Certainly. Thanks very much for the call and the question. I should point out that a listener named Aaron, who connected with us via Facebook, had pretty much the same question. So is that something you worry about, Mike?
There is wording in the bill. I'm looking at the bill here that says...
Don't worry. I'm going to let everybody have a chance to be heard.
Okay, Mike, it says a public school or school corporation may not discipline a student journalist for exercising this freedom, also may not dismiss, suspend, discipline, reassign, transfer, or retaliate against a media advisor for exercising these freedoms. So there is wording pertaining to that question in the bill.
The larger question, and was it Todd or Representative Clear who was trying to jump into the conversation there?
It's Todd.
Todd, yes, please.
Well, just you had thrown the question out to the representative and myself about
yes.
You know, the student protection kinds of things. And so, one, I would just say, you know, the issue of search and seizure kind of came up there. And, you know, a principal just doesn't walk up to a kid's lockers, start opening things up and rummaging through. It's a reasonable suspicion standard that they have that something is needs to be investigated. So that just kind of addresses that side of things. I guess I go back to, a concern and appreciate where the amendment was placed in there about the language has to be gratuitously profane. We still come down to who makes that decision, whether it's profane or gratuitously profane, and is it going to be libelous or slanderous, and is it going to, incite things? And sometimes those become more reactionary. I kind of go back to my original point that as this bill has been discussed kind of in the principal's network, we've had some examples come up of some of our public figures, public officials, that have used some pretty strong language, and language I wouldn't want in my school newspaper if I were the principal there. Yet if the students are merely citing that language, is that an appropriate place for that language in that student newspaper? So I think that's where we feel like the current situation of being able to take that content and say, no, that isn't appropriate here in this particular school.
John, if I may jump in,
certainly.
I think this goes back to the issue of control, and I understand the concern, but the fact is students are being exposed not only to that language, but to all kinds of other language and messages and influences through media, including social media. And one of the things that we're trying to accomplish here is to provide a civics education on a number of levels in the school setting to allow student journalists and the broader school community to be part of that. And in today's world, you may be able to keep something out of the student newspaper because of Hazelwood, but you can't keep students from being exposed to it. And I think many of us would argue that it's important for student journalists to have the opportunity to do that reporting and have those discussions in the context of student media, and not to be artificially held back, and also to recognize that schools have no control or very little control over what's going on in social media. And those are really some of the biggest challenges and threats to many school communities right now. And this is an opportunity to do journalism right. It's an opportunity to provide outstanding journalism education and to prepare, again, not only the student journalists, but other students and the broader school community for more robust experience talking about important issues and civics education in general.
Todd, I'm going to give.
I appreciate that perspective.
Yeah, we've got about 45 seconds. I want to give you the last word here before we head into a break. So, Todd.
Was that for me?
Yeah, for you. For you, Todd.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Certainly.
I think I look at it somewhat as Representative just mentioned about the education of our kids. And so that's where I've offered, and I think it's a more proactive approach of raising up all the positive examples. It was very interesting to hear testimony praising the positive relationships. And I think we have the ability to build those up across the state versus putting in legislation that then makes it difficult to be proactive, because there are checks and balances within the school systems that if something isn't, the decision isn't appreciated by that student journalism advisor or the students and their parents, there's a superintendent, there's a school board, there's abilities to work through those things. So the best part is we are debating the bill, and we look forward to the continued discussion and service to the journalism community within our schools.
We're talking about student journalist rights and responsibilities here on No Limits today. My guests are Indiana Representative Ed Clear. He's a Republican from New Albany. Diana Hadley, who's the Executive Director of the Indiana High School Press Association. Mike Kloppenstein and Drew Tapp from Southport High School. And Todd Best, who's with the Indiana Association of School Principals. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about Indiana House Bill 1130, which would provide some protections to student journalists in public schools and state-funded universities. My guests are Representative Ed Clear, Republican from New Albany, who is one of the bill's authors, Todd Bess, who is executive director of the Indiana Association of School Principals, Mike Klopfenstein, who is the newspaper advisor at Southport High School, and Southport High School student journalist Drew Tapp, and Diana Hadley, who is the executive director of the Indiana High School Press Association, which, again, I must disclose, I have a conflict of interest regarding in that that I have fiscal oversight responsibilities for IHSPA. So we were talking about really, it sounds like this is not an issue, the point of agreement here. There isn't an issue in schools where the principals and the advisors have good relationships and there's a lot of communication. Where the conflict comes is in schools where that might not be the case. We've got a caller, and again, if you want to join this conversation, you can do so by sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, finding us on social media, or doing what Scott has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Scott, I understand you had an experience that's somewhat on point here.
Yes, I appreciate the conversation very much. I think it's an important issue, and I'm glad to hear people talking about it. My name is Scott. In the late 70s, I was a editor-in-chief of the Yorktown High School broadcaster. And we had one of those situations where the communication between the staff of the newspaper, the administration, and our faculty advisor was tested, to say the least. We were perhaps in a little bit of a different situation. We were a self-supporting newspaper in the sense that we went out, we published our own paper, we sold our own advertising, we owned our own equipment, and the high school really was just the facility, the physical facility in which we produced this biweekly newspaper. We decided to run a series of articles on teenage pregnancy here in the late 70s because it became obvious that of all the area, county, and city high schools, we had an issue to discuss here, and we decided to do a multiple-part series on teenage pregnancy. We talked to clergy, we talked to physicians, we talked to a number of sources, and I'm going to backtrack here for just a second. We did come out at the beginning of the year with an editorial statement, and basically the way it was set up was that once we started publishing, the editors-in-chief of the newspaper were, in fact, the publishers of the newspaper. We ran into a lot of conflict when the first of the series came out, and the administration tried to tell us that, no, you may not publish the rest of this series. To make a long story short, we did have to file a lawsuit charging First Amendment, a breach of First Amendment rights, and it was a freedom of the press issue. The administration did attempt to cancel the contract of our newspaper advisor just before her tenure went into effect. Long story short, the newspaper is still there. The administrators in conflict with us are not. My concern is, and the reason I bring up this story, is that journalism is not new. There are established ethics and principles and procedures to follow. And if we're looking at giving our kids a true education in journalism, in publishing a newspaper, we need to give them pretty wide latitude as long as they have the responsibility and those ethics to do it responsibly. The flip side of the coin is that when things go bad, you start talking about censorship. And the last thing I want my kids in school is to learn all these journalism standards and ethics. And on the flip side of that coin, learn that censorship is real as well. So I look forward to you gentlemen debating this further. And thank you for allowing me to comment.
Certainly. Thanks very much for the call. Scott. So, Todd, I'm going to throw this. Are there changes, amendments, or ways that this bill could be altered that would alleviate some of the principal's concerns about it?
Yeah, I think so. I've done some research and tried to study the issue to again, balance the rights and needs of the journalism programs and still provide the principals a little protection. Here's a point I want to make that I just get concerned about. It was some of the discussion that we had when we met much earlier this year with the representative and Diana and the students and advisors, that even you know, if an article gets published or something goes on air that maybe didn't fall within those items, but the principal might have been able to say, hey, that content doesn't work for us. So it goes out and the community reacts. The principal, their name isn't on there as a journalism advisor, but the principal really gets associated with the principal's name gets associated with the school. We really worry about the protections then that our principals have in terms of the community and reacting to that particular situation. Because ultimately, a principal really doesn't have much protection. They're on that year-to-year contract most often, and the superintendent and school board can make the decision that they're not going to return without a lot of other due process kinds of things occurring. So it's a long explanation to say, just like to see somewhere that the principal does have some say, and it's one of those maybe such that their reasons have to have certain guidelines under why, and the timing has to be prompt or timely or however you want to say that, so that it isn't an indefinite decision kind of thing. Because I think that just gives those situations a little bit of protection, maybe strikes us a compromise in between where we are right now with Hazelwood and where this bill, I think, takes us somewhere as well.
Diana.
Well, the numbers don't indicate that's such a problem. 10 states now have laws comparable to House Bill 1130. Protecting the ability of students to publish lawful and non-disruptive editorial content. Pennsylvania and the District of Columbia offer the same protection by way of State Board of Education rules. The combined experience of these jurisdictions covers more than 170 years. And we have no cases that there are problems. You know, they've looked through databases and they've come up with a grand total of zero. And they've also found that none of the states have followed up with legislation to get rid of this protection for students. So it really doesn't seem to be such a great problem. And this isn't intended to punish administrators. It's intended to develop the strong relationships like Southport has with their administration, rather than just have the administrator decide that he has this control, so he'll use it. We've awarded the Louis Engelhardt Award to 19 principals and superintendents over the last several years. And our most recent recipient, Evans Brannigan from North Central High School, was nominated by his students. And, you know, I'm going to read two of the things students said about him. Mr. Brannigan is always open to doing interviews with our staff. He gives us excellent insight on what's happening around the school. Another student said, Mr. Brannigan is a great principal because he really cares about improving North Central and is open-minded to new ideas. He's always supportive of us and always willing to grant an interview. What those students are saying is there is access to the principal, and that access provides them a chance to talk, but even more important, it gives him a chance to listen. And what we can learn from our students will sometimes improve, and I would like for Mike to follow up on this, and Drew.
Well, actually, I've got a question for Drew here. In that one of the things Representative Clear said just a little while ago is that at least part of the point of this is that we want to make this an educational experience and have all of this taking place within an environment of some structure where you're getting some guidance and feedback. What would be stopping you right now from publishing whatever you wanted to on Facebook or on a website that is outside school control that no one, including a newspaper advisor, can dictate what sort of language you should use or what sort of topics you should engage with?
Yeah, so the only thing that would be stopping me would be my own morals, what I think to be right and wrong, or anything that, like, how I was raised. But there's really no legal guidelines. There's no adult who'd be supervising what I'd be posting online outside of my parents who would watch my social media or anything like that. And so there would be nothing that would stop me from going on to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, what have you, and posting whatever I want using whatever language I choose besides those the morals and everything like I brought up before. Whereas in the newspaper environment, I mean, I'm the front page editor, so whatever I put together, people are going to see whether they pick up the paper or not. They're going to see it when it's sitting on the a desk or something like that. So for a story to be put on the front page, and this goes for any story that we publish, whether it's on our print or on our online mediums, it has to go through, a staffer has to bring the idea that then has to go through a section editor such as myself, our two managing editors, our editor-in-chief, which should be known, our two managing editors and our editor-in-chief are all seniors, and then they also have to be approved by Mr. K in the end. So there's a lot of years of experience going on down the line, and there's also a lot of different opinions that are going down the line before a story can be published. It's not as though I can walk in, throw together a front page that puts my opinion all over the place and uses gratuitous language or anything that's profane or anything along those lines and just put it out there for anybody to see. The newspaper is an educational experience, and I've learned over the years what we should cover and like how to cover it in a more appropriate manner.
Mike, what do you hope students get out of the experience of working on the student newspaper?
It's a good question, John. I was observed. I had my official teacher observation, one of my three this year, this week, and one of our master teachers walked into my newspaper class to do the observation, and I always do a silent cheer when I see that because I love being observed in newspaper class. The end result was, as is so often the case, that master teacher was absolutely blown away by the work that the students were doing in the class. She was really impressed by the professional atmosphere. She was impressed by their handling of responsibility, by the seriousness with which they took their work. And I told her in our post, in the post observation, that what I teach kids journalism, and I want them to learn journalistic skills. I want them to learn how to be journalists. But probably half of what I want them to learn in a class goes beyond journalism. It's operating in a real world, at least an environment that's as close to the real world as you can get in high school. It's operating under responsibility and taking that responsibility very seriously. It's learning how to be professional. It's learning how to work together. That's the environment that I think good journalism programs can create. And those are so important for students to work under because the work that you get from those students is phenomenal. I mentioned earlier, and I want to backtrack what I said. I think I said that those schools that have heavy-handed principals, there's either no journalism program or bad journalism programs. That's not entirely true. There are certainly advisors and journalists that are very good that work in schools like that. They're just frustrated, and very often the advisor wants to leave those schools and shut down. I think the important thing here is that this bill would allow environments like the one I described to happen in schools all over the state. And when you have environments where you cultivate responsibility, professionalism, and all under high expectations, it is amazing the work that students can produce.
Todd, I'm going to ask the same question to you. What, speaking on behalf of the principals, what do you hope, or what would the principals hope that students get out of working either for the student newspaper or in a journalism program around the state?
Well, I think it would echo what I think Mike said, because
we recognize the value of those classes. Most of my principal and administrative experience was at Franklin High School. We had a newspaper, had a yearbook. We had a student radio and TV instructor coming in at full slated classes all day long, and they did some great work. So hands-on, real-world broadcasting, publishing experience, opportunity to interview, people in a variety of manners. So it really, really spoke to their interest.
Representative Clare, we're getting close on time here. What is the process going forward with this bill? Because it's moved out of one chamber and it's over in the Senate side now. Where is it in the process there?
Thank you. It's scheduled for hearing in the Senate Education Committee next Wednesday, the 15th, and we're looking forward to that opportunity. The chairman of that committee typically holds bills for a week, so I'm expecting the bill will be up for possible amendment and a vote the following Wednesday. So that would be the 22nd, I believe. And then it would advance to the full Senate. Depending on whether it's amended in committee or on the floor of the Senate, it may come back to the House for concurrence with the Senate amendments or go to conference committee in April. And one thing I'll say quickly, John, is that students have been part of this from the beginning, and that's been a very important part of this effort, this initiative, not only students, but advisors and teachers and professors of journalism from all over Indiana. It's been a great part of this. This is really student-led, and it's great to have Drew on the show today. He is one of many students who've been very active in this and who have taken ownership of it, and this is their bill.
Well, that will have to be the last word. I know we could talk a lot more about this. I would like to thank my guest for what has been a very lively conversation, Indiana State Representative Ed Clare. He is a Republican from New Albany. Todd Bess, who is Executive Director of the Indiana Association of School Principals. Mike Klopfenstein, who is the advisor of the student newspaper at Southport High School. And one of his star students, Southport High School student journalist Drew Tapp, and my colleague Diana Hadley, who is the executive director of the Indiana High School Press Association. Also would like to thank our guests for some great questions and comments and for their participation. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations. We'll be right back.